You're right on. Whether it's, I don't want to make a comparison to a dog, but
welcome to the Inner Sales Podcast, where you will learn how to connect with your own intuition and create a more successful and enlightened sales career. Listen as John and Russ discuss what it takes to drive revenue from the inside out. And now, here's your host, John Stanis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Inner Sales, the podcast from 3YG, where we talk about the sales process and what is holding your team back from their sales goals, their sales revenues, and what's stopping your company from meeting its revenue goals. I am John Stanis, and per usual, I'm joined by Russ Salzer. Hey, Russ, how you doing?
Hey, good afternoon, John. Good.
How's the weather in Wisconsin? Are you frozen? Are you able to move? Are you buried under 10 feet of snow or not?
I'm actually quite tired of talking about the weather.
Oh. So. That's what everybody, they invented weather so people who had nothing to talk about have something to talk about.
All right, we better not talk about it. We have something to talk about.
We do have something to talk about. You seem very excited about this when we were talking earlier, prepping for the show, this subject we want to talk about today. So the title of this podcast is, do you have a sales issue or a leadership issue? We're just going to go over some of the stats we've talked about in previous episodes. And ones that really stand out to me are just the amount of tenure that salespeople tend to have at companies. It's a very short amount of time. The average tenure for a sales rep is about a year and a half, 18 months. And then when you go on to a sales manager, it's not that much longer. It's only about 2 years. That is an insane stat, in my opinion. I've jumped around a fair amount in my own career, but 2 years is very much on the short end of what I would think would be a successful stint at the company. I'm usually myself, you know, 3, 4, 5 years at least, I would think. If you're jumping around every 2 years, and I'm looking at your resume, I'm going, why are they hopping around so much? What's going on? Why can't they hold the position down?
I was just going to say, unfortunately, it's far too, and this isn't everybody. This is an average. This data came out through a survey, which I actually found to be pretty accurate based on my experience. Again, averages. There's people who are, stay with the same company for much, 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 much longer and have great successful careers. But I'm talking about kind of on average. Mm-hmm. It's not a long tenure. We've talked about it before in the context of, how do you hire? How do you make a better prospector? Kind of all aspects of sales, this kind of pops up. And you couple that with the fact of some of the, recent Salesforce surveys they did around performance. 80%+ of sales reps provide little to no year-over-year revenue growth. So when you take a look at that and say, hey, the majority of people, 80-20 rule, aren't making it, it's not a surprise, actually, that the tenure is quite high.
Mm-hmm. Quite low.
Quite low. the turnover is high. You're right. Thanks. Good catch.
Yeah, and definitely not that 40-year tenure you hear about sometimes. People have been at a company for 40 years, and they're finally retiring, which I think in general in this day and age, that's history in general. But 2 years is far too short a time. So when we talk about the issue of sales people versus leadership, where do you think a lot of this problem is when it comes to, salespeople being able to hit their goals and increase their tenure? I'm guessing most of that tenure shortfall is because, and again, we've talked about this in the past, that a lot of the sales cycle is around a year, year and a half, especially for some B2B companies selling capital equipment. It takes a long time to go through it. And it's about one sales cycle where they not so much realize, but they decide, all right, we're going to let these salespeople go.
Yeah, so there's two parts to the stat. One is the people who are asked to leave. The other one is sales reps jump out. And you're right, John, you hit on it perfectly. It's almost as long as one sales cycle. And I don't think that's consciously calculated, but I think the tendency is to hang in with the rep for about as long as we think it takes to make a sale, which for most companies is long, 6 to 18 months or more. So that's when we cut them loose. The same dynamic goes on with the sales manager. We hang on to them for a little bit longer. I think in the survey that I read around sales managers, it was almost like there was a grace period of a year. Mm-hmm. You kind of let somebody get in, get their feet wet, kind of hang in there for a while, and then the pressure starts going up after a year.
What's your own experience back when you were doing management? Did you kind of find yourself falling into the same trap?
You know, I think so. Certainly not for every rep, but, you know, I think there's some dynamics which are worth talking about. So the one thing I want to say, and I realized when we were talking about putting this together and I was writing up some notes for it, I'm probably going to upset a lot of sales managers. And this is not meant to be kind of a front on their performance, but what I've noticed and I'm going to speak to is trends that I've seen. In the last couple of months alone, I've had six different companies who have moved on from reps. In almost every case, it was involuntary separation for the same reason. They just weren't delivering. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty prevalent. And I'll sometimes get called in to help coach a particular rep. You know, so as I look at what, you know, that trend and what I do, I think we do a huge disservice to sales folks. Number one is how we interview and hire and making sure we're clear on the expectation. But once they come in, we sort of just let them go and cross our fingers. You know, we hope for the best. But as I mentioned in a different podcast, I had a great quote. I was meeting with a company, this goes back probably 3 years now, where I was talking to their internal board of directors and they said, hey, we can tell in a week if a rep is going to make it or not, which I agree with. And that's kind of been my experience too. And I said, well, how long does it take you to deal with them? And they said 2.5 years. They kind of chuckled. That unfortunately is a reality. I think on some level we can tell that we got a problem, but here's the crux. And this is where it all gets down to kind of root cause. I don't think we know what to do. We don't know what to do with them short of maybe we can manage behavior. You know, hey, get in the field. You know, I've had owners and sales managers say, I don't want to see you in the office, as if that's an indication that somebody is moving in the direction of driving revenue. So we tend to focus on the behavioral part of pushing them out or pushing them to make calls or, you know, pushing them to be more active. And it just doesn't work that way for a variety of reasons. So getting back to root cause, like an old mentor of mine, you know, who was married 5 times, he said, hey, after the 4th wife, I started to take a look at, you know, what kind of bad luck do I have picking 4 women who are all the same? Or do I start looking at what the common denominator might be and how am I in the relationship or how am I managing? And if you're seeing high level of turnover, salespeople not hitting their numbers, you know, and if you believe the Salesforce survey, which I think is probably pretty accurate, you know, you can 80% of your team is probably not where you would like them to be from a revenue perspective.
So it sounds like it could probably, in a lot of cases, not be the team, and it's more a function of leadership. Are you saying that in general that most sales leaders are afraid to lead or really afraid to take steps to improve performance before they have to move on from a sales rep?
I think there's several reasons. One is a lot of people are conflict averse, and we tend to not in business like to have conversations around performance. Well, let me back up. Maybe we made the wrong hire. Maybe we made the wrong hire because we're not looking for the right type of person, depending on what business objectives we have. You know, and then we bring them in, and I think there's too much of, you know, we just expect salespeople to know what to do. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case. If you ask during an interview, you know, tell me about the sales training you had. Tell me about how you use that. Tell me about how that's influenced your work today. How has that influenced your productivity work? You'll find that very few people have gone through any sales training that is meaningful or effective. You know, and then you look at the majority of companies can't map out their sales process. They just don't have it. And, you know, then you bring them into something that's absent process. You know, further complicated by the fact that you probably have been promoted as a sales manager or leader because you're probably a great salesperson. Mm-hmm. Having to be a great salesperson doesn't always translate to being a great manager, or you may not even know what made you confident. You know, so leadership really comes down to coaching and how can I help coach and develop a rep to really excel And they may be ill-equipped to do that only because they have not had, you know, the kind of training that was meaningful or helpful or translatable, you know, to convey it. You know, I could coach, you know, a sport, but chances are I've played in it. I've been around it. I've learned it. I know how to translate that into, you know, helping somebody take action. And a lot of times, unfortunately, when it comes to sales, that's not the case. So you recognize you have an issue. And then what I see far too often is you start kind of hammering on the rep. Again, get out, do this, do that, make calls. I want to see your call log. I'm not seeing the updates in the CRM, blah, 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 blah. It's all behavior based, but there's much deeper kind of reasons behind that. So, you know, when I look at it again, it's just say, hey, if I have a performance issue, you know, in general, you know, you can either look at, is it, you know, can I switch out the team and make a difference? It's still a bit of a crapshoot. Or how do I train and develop those folks effectively?
Mm-hmm. I think that touches on something that we had also talked about earlier, where often people that get put into sales management positions usually or obviously are brought up from the ranks of salespeople themselves.
Yeah.
And they're usually high performers, people that can, you know, churn out a lot of sales on an individual contributor level. So then they're asked then, all right, bring this to a management level. And in my opinion, and in my experience, and this is across not just sales, but all professions where people are really good at their individual contributor role. But then when you get to a management role, it's a very different skill set. And so they expect you to perform in managing people because you're good at individual level, but it's such a different skill set that it doesn't always translate. Sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you got a person that has some natural inclination to management or can figure out and has enough desire to learn on the job of how to really manage well. But then a lot of the time you have ones who aren't equipped with or don't really want to be doing that position.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a very different skill set. I think there's a different dynamic when it comes to sales, and that salespeople who generally excel, again, I haven't seen a lot of good, solid training. We've talked about it before. You don't see four-year degrees in selling. Very rare. Mm-hmm. Very some. You know, so we're not getting the basis. It's not like being an engineer who's a competent electrical, mechanical, whatever engineer, and they somehow get promoted. They may not know how to manage well or lead or coach, but they got the technical stuff down. They're good engineers. And again, when it comes to selling, I think it is a different dynamic because a lot of times people who excel in selling don't really know. They're sort of an unconscious competent. They do what they do, and they may do it very well to the point where they get a promotion, but it's not transferable necessarily skill because they generally were absent a process, absent good training. You know, they may have made it, you know, through hard knocks. A lot of good prospectors who I've seen and deal with came up through, you know, going door to door selling cable TV or selling office furniture in downtown Chicago, where they learn the hard way. But it's not a transferable skill because so much of it is really underneath the surface. There's unconscious stuff. So unfortunately, I think there's some things that happen when we have performance issues in the sales ranks that a lot of sales managers, sales leaders, and owners, if there's no sales leadership, there tends to fall on the owner if it's a smaller company. You know, we bring them in under the fallacy that we think they should know what to do. And then we realize that's maybe not going to happen. And then we think it's going to somehow correct over time. And that typically doesn't change. You know, then it gets down to, well, it's better than having nobody in the role. You know, even though it's not where I want it to be, we're not delivering the kind of revenue, it's better than not having.
I would argue against that.
But that's what happens, is it's better than no one. And I've actually heard that a lot. And I can get that. I can get, hey, it's better than having somebody there than not. You know, another one is, or you think technology will solve the problem. That we bring in a CRM, we bring in a solution, or we, you know, bring in a marketing platform or do whatever, it's going to solve the problem. And typically it doesn't. It only compounds it, you know. So I think there's a bunch of fallacies that go into what's going to happen with sales folks. And then the clock ticks. And as you mentioned earlier, we get close to the end of the sales cycle. We let them hang out for one sales cycle, then we move on.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you break that cycle? And I'm not sure, you know, when I look at what's the real root cause here, and oftentimes I'll say this to people, you know, when, hey, do you have a sales issue or do you have a leadership issue? Not that you turn, you know, get rid of your sales leaders, but how do you shift the onus on helping them develop and helping them develop their teams, you know, to really deal with the issue? I think a lot of sales managers don't trust their intuition. Back to the earlier comment, hey, we can tell in a week if a rep is going to make it or not. Mm-hmm. Why don't you trust that? Why don't you figure out how to deal with it? Why don't you have conversations with the rep that says, hey, I'm not feeling good about this, even though we're only 5 days into it. I'm not exactly sure. You know, maybe I'm not seeing what I think would be effective activity. You know, whatever it is kind of follow that intuition.
So if we talk about these issues, and obviously you do, and people bring you in to do a lot of coaching on individual salespeople. Is there ever any interest or do people come to you asking for management sales skills? I mean, are there classes out there? Are there people like you that offer services to train sales managers?
It's funny that you brought that up because I went into this, you know, when I started this business about 4 years ago, I was really focused on sales individual and sales team development. And I really wasn't thinking of sales leadership development. And it's becoming very apparent to me that it's a big, 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 big issue. And so I'm working on trying to work through that. I have some calls coming up with some companies where we're going to deal with some issues. But it gets into another fallacy. The fallacy is because you're a sales manager, a sales VP, and you may have sold well, whatever your pedigree is, we think mm-hmm. you know what to do. And here's, again, I talked about this before, but I do want to touch on it because when you think about selling and, you know, why would a profession have 80%+ of salespeople not hitting or providing year over year revenue? It's insane. You know, but such a large percent of the population is essentially below any kind of standard. If you're not delivering year over year revenue growth, why would you be here unless you're not interested in growing? You know, so there's the reason I think for that is there's so many kind of unconscious things that go on when it comes to salespeople. You know, the fear of picking up the phone, the fear of calling people, the fear of making new connections, the fear of rejection. I mean, the list goes on and on. And there's a great quote, which I've used a lot from a guy who was a psychologist and a pharmacist in France, Emile Couillet. I'm probably butchering that name, but he said the unconscious self is the great director of all functions.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, so much of what we do, we're not even aware of why we do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then it's only that when you start to get into that aspect of it, you know, where we flip into survive mode or versus thrive mode, you know, that's when we can start to make a real difference in terms of sales performance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a skill to be able to coach, recognize, develop, you know, help salespeople work through that. So it's not as easily accessible. It's certainly not training that a lot of salespeople and sales managers have gone through. I think that's where the real root cause and the real change starts in terms of driving sales performance is getting into the stuff below the surface that gets in the way. Whether it's a sales manager or a sales rep, it doesn't make any difference. So the other thing is, you know, it takes a while to build habits,
mm-hmm.
effective habits, you know, somewhere between, you know, 2 to 3 months on a regular basis where I finally kind of rewired myself to move that into a habit. And, you know, so if you think about, you know, bringing on a rep or onboarding a rep, you know, those first 90 days are critical from a behavioral mm-hmm. perspective and making sure they're on the right track, making sure they're doing the right things. You get beyond that, it's harder to change. You know, if you have more senior non-performing sales reps, it's even a bit trickier because they've established so many habits over a lot of years, which may or may not serve them well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but it does take a lot of, you know, contact time. How do I coach and develop and stay with them, you know, to make sure they're moving in the direction that we think is going to be most effective to driving revenue.
Mm-hmm. I have so many directions I want to take this right now because habits just seem to be like, I don't know if it's just because it's the new year or stuff like that, but everybody, you know, you get to the new year, everybody's making resolutions for what they're going to do. And obviously we're past the point where most people fall off their resolutions. I think they say most people's resolutions, especially for things around fitness, everybody's going to get in shape, everything around the new year, is by the time you get to February, everybody that was going to the gym on January 1st, like half of those people might still be going to the gym. I should say January 1st. If everybody is going to the gym on January 1st, half those people have fallen off. They haven't given that themselves that time to build up that habit. Mm-hmm. And then you talk about salespeople, older salespeople getting stuck in their ways. And this brings me to think about, I've got two dogs in this room with me right now. You can't hear them. Anyways, we actually took these dogs. We're doing training for the dogs. And it's very interesting thinking about the way you train a dog and how they always say you can't train an old dog new tricks. Mm-hmm. And it's because dogs are very, I mean, they learn a behavior and then that behavior gets reinforced throughout their lives. Yeah. And as that behavior gets more and more reinforced, it's harder and harder for them to unlearn that skill. So, you know, you got a dog that jumps up and every time you do whatever you're doing, something you're doing is encouraging that jump up. Well, if they learn that over 8-9 years, they're going to keep doing that, even though if they're 9 and then all of a sudden you try to change that behavior, they have it so built into their neural pathways.
Sure, exactly.
This, their response, yeah, to this particular stimuli that this is what I'm going to do. And I have to think that's got to be a real big thing with salespeople and people in general too. I think that has to carry over into that process. I think you've mentioned that some of your younger people you're coaching are much more adaptable to changing or to changing their behavior to increase the results, whereas older sales reps are much more resistant. And this kind of feeds in that same idea of having to build those connections. And if you have old connections, old wiring, it just is that much harder to change those habits when they've been so ingrained over time.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think it goes with anything. And, you know, you're right on, whether it's, I don't want to make a comparison to a dog, but
yeah,
it's exactly the same. We don't change, we don't change habits easily. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's even, you know, this could be a whole fun conversation about your job as a sales rep is to get your clients or your prospects, if you want to drive new customer acquisition, to change that habit of what they've been doing, what they've been buying. So there's an immense, this is off course a bit, but there's an immense value in learning that for myself, because what I'm trying to do mm-hmm. as a sales rep is exactly that. When I'm in front of somebody, most people don't want to change. There's a habit. We're down. It's not easy to change. Even mm-hmm. if I don't like it, I may stay with it for a long time before I change, because it's hard to change.
Yeah.
Create a new habit. That's what you're trying to do as a sales rep, is change that. So there can be a lot of value in figuring out how to rewire that. And again, but it does take time. It takes, you know, again, 60 to 90 days of repeat, you know, to kind of establish some new wiring and gets headed in the right direction, which is a lot of contact time with a leader, a mentor, a trainer, whatever, a coach, to make sure that reinforcement and starts to move in the direction of something that's more effective and serves the company well and serves the rep well. Mm-hmm. And you know, for sales, ultimately drive revenue and drive new customer acquisition. That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm. So taking that same approach, that same thought about new versus old, let's think about this in two different scenarios. Talk to me about, you know, bringing on a new rep, somebody who hasn't been into sales for too long, versus a more tenured sales rep that just hasn't been performing. How would you treat those two different scenarios?
I think in a lot of ways they're the same, but certainly when you bring in on a new rep, I really think it does start with the hiring process. You know, the series of questions we ask. Can they provide some examples of behaviors that you think are important? In other words, if I'm bringing somebody in to be an account manager and they just have to manage a book of business, that's a different series of questions than if I'm interviewing and hiring a rep whose sole or primary responsibility is new customer acquisition. That's a prospecting role. It's a very different skill set. You know, so it starts with that. What are you trying to get? What do you want them to do? Being able to convey that accurately, even when I put out my job posting. You know, mm-hmm. hey, this is a hunting position. It's not a farming position. You know, when the person's in, you know, you're asking a whole different series of questions that give me evidence or some data that supports the fact that you can do the work involved, providing I know what's involved in that, picking up the phone, doing some research. Then they show up, you hire them, and get very clear on expectations. It is actually quite amazing to me. Two things I'll ask new salespeople. I'll say, do you have an objective? Do you have a revenue objective for this year we're in or whatever? And far too often they'll say no. You would be surprised at that probably, but they don't even know what they're supposed to be going. And then I'll say, well, did you make up one of your own? I think you got to know what you're trying to achieve here. And a lot of times they'll say yes. And then the next question I ask is, do you know what it takes to pay for yourself? Mm-hmm. All in, base, bennies, car, travel, whatever. Do you know what kind of revenue you have to drive to pay for yourself, given whatever their margin is? And most of them don't. So for me, that's the first hurdle. And so what I'll coach owners and managers to do is you got to convey that to a rep. Say, hey, we're here to help you. Here's the first hurdle we want to get to as quickly as we can. We want to make sure you're self-sufficient, you're paying for yourself. Know what that is. Know what that means in terms of activity. In other words, that's X number of accounts based on average sale. You back in, given some ratio data to say that this is the level of prospecting. And then stick with it. Stick with it. You know, you got to have a lot of contact time. Sales leadership is a contact sport. Stay with them. Help them. Coach them where they're stumbling. Get help. Here's another one. This is another big one, which I've seen far too often, where sales managers are reluctant or afraid to go ask the leadership, their leadership, for support to do coaching and development training. Because the same fallacy, hey, we think sales reps should know what to do. They're afraid that should be their job. And they don't want to ask for help. It'll look bad. What do I have you here for? If I got to pay somebody else to come in and train or help support, you know, that's what I'm paying you for. So right. That's another one you'll run into, but you know, to be able to, again, contact support, help develop, help get them off and running for at least 90 days or beyond. So that's new, which tends to be maybe a little bit easier. You know, when it comes to, you know, if you have a percent of the population that's not performing, that had been around for 6 months, a year, I'd take immediate action. There's no time like the present. And that looks like, hey, are we clear? Do we have goals? Do we have objectives? Are you doing enough from an activity perspective? You know, look at sales as only two things. It's activity. Are they doing enough, regardless of what stage of the pipeline it's at? And then can we figure out how to make them more effective at each one of those various stages? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's contact time. It's managing that. It's weaving in, you know, how do you build your CRM, your database, to know that they're doing it, that they're doing those activities, you know. And then, but don't avoid it. Don't think it's going to magically change. Don't, you know, I have one particular client who's cleaned house salespeople on a couple of occasions. He'll get fed up. He's a great guy. He just says, hey, on some level, I don't want to know, because if I know, then I'm going to perform him. So there's a little bit of an ostrich denial thing. And then ultimately, he gets upset enough where he comes in and just gets rid of the whole team and goes solo for a while. Then he'll come back in and hire reps. And, you know, you don't want to have that be caught in that cycle. You can break that cycle. And, you know, but you got to manage. It's no different than anybody else. Is you got to stay on it. You got to be clear on what you want. You know, how do you use all the tools you have to help develop them? If you need help, ask for help, you know, correct it. I had a recent client that called me and wanted me to do some coaching with the new rep she had just hired. And the prior one was in the position for 15 months. She let him go. You know, it was a not quite six-figure investment, but close. You know, that's the stuff it's such a high business cost.
Yeah.
You know, why did it take 15 months? Why spend nearly six figures in making it happen, and then go hire again and hope for the best? You know, it seems to be the pattern far too often. You know, we just hope for the best.
So you'd mentioned in there a little bit ago about CRM, and we talked about technology not being a silver bullet to just fix all this, but I have to think technology plays some kind of role in driving these behaviors and helping salespeople reach their targets. So what do you think is the role of technology?
I would say you could actually go back and listen to the CRM podcast we did earlier.
Yeah.
And John, you know this. I think far too often the CRMs are just too complicated.
Yeah.
You know, reps are going to shut. We talked about this. Reps are not going to embrace it. They're just, it's unlikely. They just don't. It's really unfortunately become, in a lot of ways, the reps' perception is this is a way for managers to keep an eye on me and track me and, you know, bust me for my performance. So it's very difficult to tell what's going on. You know, ultimately, or ideally rather, you would have the CRM be a tool that a rep sees as a really valuable tool for them to help grow their book of business, not the other way around. It's a way for me to, kind of avoid using and shuck and jive. It seems like a lot of work, you know, so it is a tricky one because I think technology plays a key role in helping manage, help lead, help develop, help hit objectives, help improve efficiency of a sales rep. But you got to be really careful about how you design them, what you buy, you know, watch the feature and benefit creep, you know, the tendency, which is more of an avoidance thing in a lot of cases, is we tend to focus on the features and benefits that are non-confrontational.
Mm-hmm.
Email campaigning, marketing stuff, cases, managing service stuff, which all are important, you know, putting in quote books, putting in price lists. You know, when you think about a lot of that stuff, it can help from on some level, but are you really getting the bang for your buck in terms of driving revenue? You know, keep it simple, focus on the behaviors. Can you manage the behaviors? You know, from an activity perspective, how do you use that activity data to figure out how to become more effective at any step of the process? So technology is key. I can't imagine running with a team without it, regardless of the size.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. I won't be able to run my life without technology, but I would say the same for sales in general and CRMs. So as we wrap this up here, what are a couple of pieces of advice, one or two maybe, that you would give people listening to this for themselves, if they're a sales manager, if they're not a sales manager, how can they help with this issue of sales managers not knowing how to work with their reports?
Well, I think the first one is to just recognize it. And if I'm not I want to mention this quote. So I was doing a presentation a couple of months ago, and I was talking about what I do. And there was a gentleman in the room who has a fractional CFO leadership company. So most companies can't afford to have a high level CFO, not controller. Mm-hmm. So a fractional CFO leadership is a great guy. He was listening to me and he said, the one variable we can never get a handle on is revenue. And he said, we can predict it. You know, we can analyze, we can study every metric in the business. We can get, you know, raw material costs, labor costs, benefit costs, manufacturing costs, you know, on and on and on and on. We can nail it down. The one variable we can seldom, if ever, get a great handle on, or we seldom, if ever, hit is the revenue number, you know, which is sad. But, you know, so I would say, if you have that issue where you can't get a handle on it, then I think it's worth taking a step back and is, hey, you know, do we really have a sales issue here, or is it a leadership issue? Are we equipped to best coach and develop and train the folks? Are we going right at it? Are we avoiding the issue? You know, is it sort of a revolving door with reps? That rep didn't work, we'll try another rep. Mm-hmm. You know, so recognition of the issue. And then, you know, being able to identify the root cause, which really comes down to, can you develop the team to really move revenue, which causes one to look at a lot of the stuff that's below the surface that impacts the ability of salespeople to be effective. So nothing, you know, again, I think just recognition of the issue that, hey, it's an issue of selling or leadership. And then if it's a leadership issue, figure out how you support it, how you develop it, and go at it from that perspective instead of just having it be a revolving door.
The old revolving door. It's not just in politics.
No. Yeah, it's so often in sales. It's It actually makes me sad because, mm-hmm. you know, salespeople are great. There's a reason they're in the job. I mean, there's so many things that go into it. Now, I still have yet to meet a salesperson who said, I consciously decided to get into sales. They don't. You know, I was talking to a guy recently and I asked him that question. I said, how'd you get into sales? Did you consciously decide? He laughed and he said, no, I was actually having a conversation with a vendor who was calling on him and they were informing me that the rep who called on me was going to be gone. And they kind of presented the opportunity. The next thing I know, I'm working for him. You know, so he went from more of a production leadership standpoint to selling, you know, and that's kind of how it rolls. So, you know, they get into it, not necessarily intentionally or consciously where they really thought about it. The training and development's not there. We tend to still think it's art form. They should know what to do. You know, start busting down some of those fallacies. And I think you'll see a real difference in terms of what happens from a revenue perspective.
It sounds like a good point to leave on. So let's wrap this thing up. How can people get a hold of you, Russ, if they want to find out more about what you do, what you sell?
Sure. Website is 3yg.us. So the number 3yg.us. All my contact information is on there. Sign up for the podcast. Give us some feedback. Feel free to reach out. Love to have conversations with folks about anything selling related. CRMs, technology, sales leadership, you name it, prospecting, I'm obsessed with. So I do want to make a comment. We have another prospecting intensive training starting towards the end of March.
Okay.
Which has been just a delight to do. It's where we had some prior episodes around prospecting, and I think we've really kind of started to hone in on how do you really develop, and you can train somebody to become a good prospector. So,
yeah, if anybody's interested in how they can improve their sales skills, obviously you have some solutions for that. You can reach me at jstannis.com, or you can reach out to me. You can also find our sales stuff in general at inner_sales on Twitter. You can also send us email directly to the show at innersales@3yg.us. You can find the show notes and any of the links on the show and the show notes on the Inner Sales part of the 3YG website. If you like this show, make sure to give us a review on iTunes, and you can subscribe to us in iTunes or in any other standard podcasting app. We work just about everywhere. The theme music for this show is Shamasi Kilokatsi by Kilokats. Thanks for him for that. Thanks for everybody for listening. It's nice to be back after our little unannounced hiatus. Otherwise, we hopefully will be seeing you all. I think we're not going to do quite every week, so we're going to be doing these, I believe, every other week going forward to make it a little bit more manageable. So see you all in maybe about 2 weeks.
All right. Thanks, Sean. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for us. Thank you.